Strikes presents Your Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC. Do you know how being a preferred borrower at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank can help you? The other day, a man who was waiting in the personal loan department was asked if this was the first time that he had applied for a loan at the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. No, he said. It was actually the fourth. Why had he come back to the Burritt? Burritt was his bank. The loan officers were friendly and sympathetic to his needs, and they were willing to take the time to discuss his financial problems and help him. The rates are lower, he said. Monthly payments are convenient. And once he had established credit at the Burritt, he had become a preferred borrower, and his loans got top priority. Sounds like a position you would like to be in? Well, if so, drop in at any one of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank's five convenient offices in New Britain, West Hartford, Rocky Hill, and Glastonbury. You too may become a preferred Burritt borrower. The long-term benefits are tremendous. And now the host of the Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. Our program is originating tonight in Kent, Connecticut. We're in a studio, but a studio of a different sort. I'm surrounded by turntables and tape machines and paraphernalia that might have come from grandmother's kitchen. We're in a sound effect studio. Actually, we're in part of the home of our guest tonight, Hamilton O'Hara, and we'll meet him in just a moment. But first, let's say hello and good evening to radio historian Ed Corcoran.
It's nice to be here. I'm really flabbergasted at all the paraphernalia. I'm really very excited about this show.
Do you think you have any idea as to how any of it works, Ed?
No, it's really going to be an experience because you hear these things and you wonder how they were done. Hamilton is an expert on that, as we well know. He was over 20 years with CBS, so we've got really one of the best people in the world on this subject.
Our guest is Hamilton O'Hara, and Ham, it's awfully good to meet you.
Very good to meet you, and welcome to Kent, both of you.
Well, thank you. What made you decide to preserve these sound effects?
Well, almost of necessity, because I'm in the business on my own on a freelance basis. I spent 31 years with CBS in the sound effects department there. Started in 1941, left in 1972. And over the years, I had collected a lot of equipment, and I had a modest studio of my own going. You know, we all have a little moonlighting on the side. And so I left CBS, packed it in, came up to Bill Klieg's God's Country up here. And here it is, such as it is, with all the mess. I've been able to save most of the things that are important to sound effects, and if I don't have it, I make it. I make it in my own carpentry shop out in the barn.
Ham, how did you get started? How did you join CBS back there in the early 40s?
I really started out in about 1938 in Westchester, and there was a local drama society there, and every woman's club around Westchester had to put on a dramatic show on the local station there, which was WFAS. So I worked with this group, and they needed somebody to do sound effects once a week. So I volunteered, and I got interested in it. And then I went away to college for a while, and I got out of college. And I was working as a mail boy at a concern on 42nd Street that shall be nameless. But I really didn't dig being in the mailroom $15 a week. I wanted to be a page at CBS in the worst way, at $15 a week. I figured that 15 was better if it had a uniform on. So, because, as you know, in the old days, everybody started out as a page. and went on to bigger things. So I figured I was going to go into that sound effects department through the page boy route. Well, it was summertime. I was living at home. Suddenly the phone rings, and this fellow at CBS says, "I've got you an appointment at personnel." Wonderful. Wowee. See, now I only had one problem. I needed a new suit.
At $15 a week, that's understandable.
I needed $30 to buy a suit, and I didn't have $30. So I figured, now what am I going to do about this? So I said, now the only way that I can maneuver this is I've got to get myself fired. So that they have to give me 2 weeks' pay, I'll have $30 in my pocket, and I can go up to Weber and Halbrunner and buy a suit. So one day I had my chance, and the head of the mail department, who was a big, rough, burly guy, you know, very short-tempered, held me overtime 1 hour, made me stay till 6 instead of 5. So the next morning I said, I got him. I'm going to come in an hour late. So I showed up at 10 o'clock instead of 9. He says, "Where have you been?" I said, "Well, I'm an hour late because you made me lose an hour of sleep last night." He says, "You're fired. Go down and get your check." And I laughed all the way down to the cashier, got my $30, bought the suit, went up, went to personnel, got on the page staff, and then spent time in the sound effects department, wandering around, looking at the equipment, talking with the guys and all that. Literally three to 4 weeks went by. And the boss of the department said, "Gee, you hang around here a lot. You interested in sound effects?" I said, "I sure am." He says, "Well, we need an apprentice." And in those days, you had to apprentice a year to become a full journeyman, and they had a year to decide whether they wanted to keep you, $27.50 a week. So they said, "Well, you're going to have to audition. Tell us about this WFAS thing that you do." And I told them. They said, "Well, you bring in a script, and we'll supply all the equipment that you need. And you can take it all up there to White Plains, and you can use CBS equipment up in their station, and we'll listen."
You were going to audition right on the premises.
Right on the air. So I lugged all the CBS equipment up to this little independent station in White Plains, set it all up. They were in awe, you know. I was in awe, too. Did the show, and the next day they said, "Very good job, you're hired."
Well, we're going to recreate some of the sounds of radio with the help of Hamilton O'Hara. But, you know, I thought it might be interesting, Ed, to trace the history of the development of sound effects.
Yeah, we found out, I guess, with Don Amici, that the earlier effects were all done artificially. It wasn't until very late in the game that they started using recordings.
As a matter of fact, Ham, you said that the original sound effects people were musicians.
That's right. The drummers in the orchestras. If you remember going to an old vaudeville show, the drummer would have temple blocks, drum blocks, different things he'd hit. He'd have the slide whistles and the kazoos and the bells and all this kind of thing, you know, to accent body movements. When you take the pratfall and the drummer goes boom, boom, you know. Well, this is what they did. Now, when sound effects started in radio, the best source of people who were intelligent in this area were the drummers. But by the time I got into it, we had records, you see, so that a lot of the artificially created sounds were gone by the boards, not all of them. See, by definition, a sound effect is an artificial means of creating a sound.
As opposed to taking a microphone out and recording a train going by.
That's right. A sound effect would be literally creating that train sound by some means other than recording an actual train, making you think you're hearing a train.
But as long as we're talking about trains, why don't we create a train artificially?
All right. Shall I keep the listeners in mystery for a minute as to how they might think it's being done?
All right.
You just stick the microphone down there a minute. All right. Now, how was that done?
I hate to tell them. A wire brush across a sheet of sandpaper.
That's right. That is a stiff wire brush that you use in your work around the house, and wire brushing paint off of wood or cement on a sheet of sandpaper.
That's all there was to it.
That's all there was to it. Now, another one, of course, that has been written up a lot is the taking the cellophane off your package of cigarettes. Very slowly,
Gee, it's quiet around the campfire tonight,
isn't
it?
Sound all right? Should be very close, and you just work it very slowly, very lightly.
Yeah, as I recall, Ham, that was, of course, a flame, but if you did it even more slowly, you could fry bacon with it, couldn't you?
That's right. It could be used as a bacon frying. See, the ear is going to tell you what to hear if the dialogue suggests what the sound is intended to be. If I say it's bacon frying, you're going to believe it's bacon frying. If I say it's a package of cigarettes, it's going to be a package of cigarettes. If it's going to be fire, you'll believe it if I tell you. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, a larger fire. Now, this is brush, well-seasoned, crinkly brush. Now, we just squeeze this back and forth, and we have a larger fire.
Right. Well, that sounds realistic, even without the need of a microphone. This looks like a straw or a corn broom that you'd find.
Right. Now, this can also be used for walking through a cornfield or something like this where you have underbrush. You know, by working it in your hands, I have it in my right and left hand here, and I'm just going to crinkle it back and forth here.
Where'd we leave the car? That's what I want to know. that's very effective.
This is a bag of sand, weighs about, I'd say, 5 pounds. And there's two ways of doing a body fall in radio. One is to fall yourself and get all bloodied, which I've done. And the other is to drop this bag of sand on a hard floor, and rather than just let it hit once, we try to bounce it two or three times quickly, because when you fall on the ground, you don't just go boom, one part of your body hitting and that's it. There's several parts of your body are going to hit one after the other. So
should I put my mic down there too?
Why not?
Okay.
See if we can get this. All right, now the script says, you know, body fall. Oh, I didn't do that right. Got to get a good grip on it. Now here we go. Body fall.
Right on cue.
How do you do footsteps? Maybe a basic question.
Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to put on my tap dancing shoes.
All right. Our guest tonight is Hamilton O'Hara, and we're visiting with Ham in his Kent Sound Effects studio. Ham, for 30 years, a sound effects man with the networks, and we're about to go through a sequence. You have your shoes on, Ham.
I have my shoes on, Mike. I won't, no brand names. See, there was always a problem in radio. There were never any rugs on the floor, right?
That's, I recall.
And nobody ever wore sneakers, or nobody went barefoot. Because otherwise, how would you know they're doing, you know, they're walking out of the room. So everybody had oak floors with no rugs. And we found that rubber-soled shoes didn't really work very well. Although, it's one of those sounds where you've got to give the person the sound that they think they want to hear. And if you use rubber-soled shoes, they would say, that's not right. Hmm. So we gave them leather heels.
That's what you've got on now.
Leather heels and leather soles.
Now, you're standing on a board, a special board?
This is a hard maple to simulate a hard maple or oak floor with a rug underneath to stop vibration as much as we can.
We're standing next to a door, and next to the oak board.
And then next to it is a canvas bag filled with plain, ordinary gravel. And that's going to be our gravel path going from the house out to the sidewalk.
Also a piece of slate.
Now, I'm going to, on this board, by the way, I'm going to walk myself out, or walk the actor, actually, out of the house. I'm going to also use it as the steps.
Mm-hmm.
By going onto the balls of my feet, I will simulate going down the stairs, then onto the gravel path, right?
You all set to take the walk?
Now we come, then we take the long walk. Then we have a piece of slate, which is going to simulate the sidewalk. Okay?
Okay, here we go.
Now, you hold the mic down there. What we do is a heel and toe. Okay. Now, I'm walking right in place. See, I'm not going forward at all. I'm standing absolutely stationary. Now, we go over to the door, right? Walk through the door. Across the porch,
Now we're on the ground. Now we're going to come to the sidewalk.
And there he goes down the street.
And what we do quite often on this on the piece of slate, a raw piece of slate, kind sounds kind of sterile. We take a little bit of sand, sprinkle it on the slate, so that you get a grinding sound in your heels. You see, it sounds more authentic.
How about going up and down stairs? Anything different in that technique as opposed to regular walking, Ham?
Well, you just go upstairs, but you do it in place. Now, we used to sometimes have an actual set of stairs that were three or four steps, but most guys in the department found that it was too cumbersome to set up mics for this situation, so we just did stairs on the same piece of wood, and that would go something like this. I don't know if you want to put the mic down there.
I'm walking along. Now we go up the stairs. At the top of the stairs, you go in the bedroom. Walk through the door. We're in the bedroom.
Again, with oaken floors.
Yes, no rugs.
Oh, that's great. Ham, what would happen if you required two people to walk across the room? Would you use two sound effects men?
If the budget had the money, you'd use two men. Many shows had two men. Many shows worked on very low budgets. One man would do both people walking. This means you got to practice your tap dancing routine and get the heel and toe going back and forth. You put the mic down there, I'll do one for you. And then, of course, there's a difference between a man and a woman. Yeah, and little kids, you know, you got to learn this, too. I mean, a man, you do it very heavy, you know, right? Like Ralph Bellamy in Man Against Crime. All right, now we have a lady going on the same floor, okay? And then a kid. All right, you know, you get the idea.
Well, why don't we listen to a sound effects pattern, Ed, from your collection. This one is from Gunsmoke, which illustrates how effectively the sound effects men were in producing a program of this nature.
Yeah, very good, Dick. And this has William Conrad in it. And the scene opens in Abilene, where he's arrested a prisoner. And he's waiting for the train to come in and take him back for trial. And this man's brothers are promised to seek vengeance and prevent him from doing it. So as the scene opens, he's about ready to go in and face the brothers. And I think you'll find the sound effects are extremely vivid. And you just feel like you're there, really, during the whole scene.
We'll listen to that excerpt right after this message.
When looking for that new car, here's a suggestion. Go to Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. No, the Big B does not sell new or used cars, but it does help people to buy them. Chances are that you didn't know that Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will make you a car loan at low, low rates. Before buying that new car, call any of our five convenient offices for information. But wait, that's not all. You'll need another car when this one wears out. And the Big B has a plan for that, too. When you finish with your new car loan, keep on making the payments into a Burritt Mutual Savings account where you'll earn big, big dividends with no effort at all. Rates range from 5 to 6% depending on the plan you choose. But whatever the plan, the next car you buy will be paid for by your Burritt Mutual Passbook. So don't wait. Drop in at any office of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank for your new car loan. Or to make that monthly payment on your old car loan. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. New Britain, West Hartford, Rocky Hill, and Glastonbury. Member FDIC. You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel and the recordings of Ed Corcoran. Brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC.
You cover the door from the other side, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, who is it?
It's me, sir, the clerk.
What do you want?
It's the Daggett boys. They're across the street at the Last Chance right now.
You're hoping I'll go over there instead of waiting for them to come here?
Huh? Well, I...
All right. I'd rather jump them than have it the other way around. Yes, sir, I guess we'll go over and talk to him.
Well, what about him?
Well, he's cuffed hand and foot to a pretty solid iron bed. I don't think he's going anywhere. You ready, Chester?
Ready whenever you are, Mr. Dillon.
All right. Let's go.
That must be them, Mr. Dillon, across the room there.
Yeah, I guess so. Quite a crowd around them. Well, Chester, the only way to get it over is to get it started.
Yes, sir. How do we do it, Mr. Dillon?
I haven't got a plan, Chester. Just face them down, that's all.
Yes, sir.
You the Daggett brothers? What if we are?
Jim, this is him. This is the fella.
Shut up, Rourke. You've been glad enough to stay out of it this far. Stay out of it now. My name's Dillon, United States Marshal from Dodge City. I got your brother Jack under arrest for murder. You probably heard about it.
Yeah. Rumors got around.
Well, I'm taking him out of here on the 9 o'clock train. He's going back to Dodge to stand trial, and my guess is he'll hang. Now, the point is this. What are you going to do about it?
Why didn't you wait? We looked you up.
You didn't answer the question, Daggett.
Still 2 hours and a half till 9 o'clock. Reckon we got plenty of time, man. We'll wait.
Why wait? What's the matter with right now?
We'd rather wait.
Maybe you're trying to pick up some helpers among this bunch of hangers-on, huh? Don't you look at them. Each one trying to sneak behind the man next to him. You're counting on any help there. Forget it.
You're pushing your luck, Dillon.
I don't think so. You boys are full of talk, that's all. You never even intended to start anything.
You're a dirty liar.
Hold it. Don't move, either one of you. All right, now, take that gun. Thank you. Yours, too.
Sure. It's your play, Dillon. The way it stands now.
Thanks. Here, Chester. Kick those back onto the tables.
All right, now leave them lay. No, nobody touch them.
Here, Chester, hold on to my gun.
All right, sir.
Just keep them off my back.
Yes, sir.
All right, you. You come here. Now, you called me a liar, didn't you?
Yeah.
Why, you can
I thought you Daggetts were tough. All right, you. You're next.
I'll wait, Marshal. I'll get to you later.
You're a no-good coward, Daggett. All right, Chester, I'll take my gun back now. Thanks. Well, boys, the show's over. Unless, of course, one of you would like to take up where the Daggett's left off. Any one of you still figuring on helping them try to take my prisoner away from me? No, I didn't think so. Because you're all fine, upright citizens now. A pride and joy to Constable Rourke here.
That's enough, Dillon.
I thought I told you the show was over. All right, now beat it. Go on, get out, all of you. Move!
Marshal, I'd say you overreached yourself there. Step past the limits of your authority.
How I enforce the law is my own business. I do things my way.
It's a way it'll get you killed someday.
Maybe.
I have to live in this town, Dillon. You don't know those Daggett brothers. You cross them, you're through. I've seen it happen.
Come on, Chester. Let's go.
All right, Mr. Dillon.
That's an exciting sequence from Gunsmoke, Ed.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, Dick. I'm glad we had a chance to play it tonight.
I'm glad we included a Western because, Ham, that's the sound effect, I think, that everybody remembers in radio. The sound effects of the horse's hoofs, and, of course, they think of the Lone Ranger.
That's absolutely right. And, of course, this is another artificially created effect, but yet it has a certain aura of natural to it because we do use material here that's awfully similar to a horse's hoof, a coconut shell. We're using real dirt, real stones, real pebbles in here. This is a heavy tray, about a foot and a half across, and we have two carved out coconut shells. We've taken the meat out, and we have straps across the top of the shell so that you can hold them, right?
Right.
And we put them right down in the dirt, and we start walking the horse.
Now, suppose I wanted to make a fast getaway and...
Right? Okay. You got to be a Buddy Rich to really be able to do that. Or I can keep that up for about 4 seconds. And then, of course, he's walking across. This is an afternoon stroll. I can do this. Now we come to the covered bridge, right? Okay. Okay, now he comes to a stop, right? Whoa, boy. Whoa, 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 whoa.
You had to really think like a horse.
Every sound effects man had to learn that one effect, how to blow his nose.
You didn't whinny by any chance, did you?
No, Brad Barker did the whinny. I figure I'm not going to take away from his feet, right?
Okay. Well, you know, there are a lot of different gadgets here on this table in front of us, Ham, and I'd like to find out a bit about some of them. For example, that box of cornstarch. What's that all about?
Well, why don't we put this up to the microphone and do it and see if they can figure what I'm doing.
I feel like Sergeant Preston of the Yukon walking through the tundra there of the snow, right?
That's right, walking through snow. That's a plain old box of cornstarch, and I'm just kneading it with my hands to simulate walking in hard-packed snow.
There's one sound effect device that you have worked up. Ham, why don't you get it up here? This is a sound effects device that I think that probably everybody who has ever taken the NBC tour has seen at one time or another.
Yes, I went there, I guess, quite some years ago, and I remember that very vividly, that one particular effect we're going to hear now. It was featured as part of the show there very prominently.
The show?
Well, the tour of NBC Studios. I think they still do it today with this particular device.
That's right. That was the old Lowell Thomas news studio at NBC with the leaded glass, the fireplace. He lived like a king down there, didn't he?
I guess he did.
And now it's the sound effects tour setup. You know, it's a museum. It's a small museum. It's very interesting, by the way. If you're down in New York, go see it.
Well, what you have here is a wooden frame.
Right. It's like
a picture frame. And some wooden blocks, right, suspended by cord.
Right. And these are to simulate, well, should I not tip them off? Why don't we just do it first and see? And see if you can tell me what show it's from, too.
All right.
Or the show that's most connected with this sound. Raid! Halt!
Gangbusters!
Yeah. Now, you put a little echo on there, you know, and it really builds up in body, you know, and put a siren with that. Why don't we do that Gangbusters opening?
You're a wild man.
Work on that. Why don't you do it? You and Ed, right? Play announcer. And I'll play sound effects, man.
Now, Ed, you're going to do the marching feet.
Yes, Dick. I'm all poised and ready to go here.
Okay. And, Ham, you're over at a series of turntables to get the rest of the effects.
I got the machine gun over here on a record. I have the siren over here, and in my mouth I'm going to have a police whistle.
All right, and I'll be the voice. Here we go. Calling the police, calling the G-men, calling all Americans to war on the underworld. Gangbusters! You're hired. Okay.
Well, that sounded very real.
It did. It did, as a matter of fact. The
incidentally, I might mention that the records we're using here this afternoon are the actual original authentic records. They're the old 78s. I don't know whether anybody's out there seen an actual sound effects record, but they may have bought some of the LPs that are on the market of sounds. We found them rather useless, the LPs, because of physical problems. The microgroove in an LP is very difficult to see into, and we have to see into that groove in order to work very fast at a console. I might show you how that works while we are on the subject. All right. Here's Big Ben thing. Okay, we're going to use this in a minute when we simulate the opening of Bulldog Grumman.
All right.
Now, we're down in the middle of the record. We're not at the beginning. We're way down in the middle, and here's the bell. Here's the bell tolling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we want to start right at the first bell. See? It's going through its whoopee thing about dum, 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 dum. You know, now
right.
It comes down to the striking. Now, there's the bell, eh? I'm backing the record up about a half a turn before that, and the needle is still sitting in that groove. Okay? Now, I take a piece of chalk, and I chalk the grooves right ahead of the needle. Okay? Now, I back the needle through the chalk, and you notice there's a little empty groove, empty black groove there showing in through the chalk, right? Now, the reason for that is that I have pre-prepared the record for the show. Okay? Now I can take the record off and put it up here, and when I come to that effect later on in the show, I can just set that needle right down in that groove without having to hunt for that bell. And that's how we work fast, you see.
You know that you've just taken me back 20 years. I hadn't thought of that since I studied, and we studied, you know, all aspects of radio production when I went to college, and we studied sound effects, but I hadn't thought of that chalk cueing in 20 years.
See, now, just to see if my hand is still good, I'm putting the record back on the turntable,
right? It doesn't disturb the fidelity when you do that, when it goes over the chalk on the next...
That's right, and, well, we're not dealing with the high-fidelity records to begin with. You know, these are old 78s. Now, I'm going to just slip this needle right down in the groove. You can hear me. I'm going to flick the needle. Right? I'm going to set it right down in that groove. All right, now we let it go. Bell, right? Now, I didn't have to hunt for it.
And how many records might you be juggling during the course of a half-hour show?
I've had up to 50, 60 records or more.
These stories I've never heard, Ham. You had a copy of the script on the top of the console, did you, behind your turntables?
There's a rack here for the records. It's for stacking records and stacking script.
Anything ever go wrong during a show where it didn't work as you expected it to work and you had to improvise? Anything that, like that ever happen, Ham?
Well, one of the classics that I remember was... We had an apprentice working a show, and he was new. Apprentices could never be the number one man on a show. They only could be a second or third man or fourth man if the show was that heavy. But somebody is a gag. You know, Dick, how they, you know, set your script on fire?
Yeah,
and
sure
a big
do.
Important thing? Yeah. All right. Well, somebody removed the last page of one scene of the show. Now, this scene was on the desert, riding along on a camel or something like this, you see. And the next scene was back in the house in lovely old England or something, you see. Well, that page was removed. So we're riding along on the camels, you see, and all of a sudden we hear the phone ring. Which was the first cue on the top of the next page.
That is a little disastrous.
While we're on the phone here, why don't I show you how the phone works. This is a regular Bell telephone that's been modified, and it works off of batteries. Now, the actor does the phone call, of course, but we do the dialing and the pickups, mm-hmm. right? You put the mic down there. and we pick up the phone, and we dial, right? Now, through the earpiece here, you can hear the clicks. And we would hold that right up to the microphone, see?
Mm-hmm.
Now we have the ring.
That's not the ring.
Yeah. Now, I'm pressing a button on here, see? I'm ringing it myself.
Sure.
In sequence. And then we have the click of the pickup on the other end. And then the actor will say, hello.
That's really wild. Could you get a busy signal?
Finished, yeah, we have a busy here. And then, of course, when the actor says goodbye, there's the click on the other end. And then you hang it up.
And you had to make sure you jiggled it just a little bit as you put it back in the cradle.
Oh, yeah, you have to jiggle it because, you know, if you just go, boom, it doesn't quite sound like a phone. We always held it at an angle like this and let it drop in. And it kind of roll in.
Yeah. First hand, one of the sounds that I think of is the squeaking door. This was the trademark of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Did you ever do the show?
I did occasionally, vacation relief. It wasn't my regular show.
We talked about Inner Sanctum Mysteries with Raymond Edward Johnson not too long ago.
Yes, Dick, and our listeners will be glad to know that he's now in Connecticut. He's at the Veterans Hospital in North Haven, so he's now, you know, one of our neighbors.
We've heard a lot of stories about the squeaking door, but we're about to hear it recreated. And perhaps we should just do the door and then talk about how we did it later, Ham. I think that
all
might
right,
be more effective. You ready for the commercial? Here we go.
All right.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. That's marvelous. Yeah. We didn't open a door at all. What did we use?
Now, this is, this is not the real door. The real door is we don't know where it is. We're still trying to find it. It was given away by CBS back in the early 50s to some school, and unfortunately, nobody knows which school it went to. We want it back now because, you know, museums are opening, and this would be a wonderful thing. It was, the real door was not designed like a normal door. It was more like your dishwasher, which is hinged at the bottom. You opened it from the top, and it had a whole series of springs and levers that would take over one after the other, and they're well rusted. And have you discussed it any time in this series, the story about what happened to that door?
No, I don't think we ever told the story on the air. I'm going to let you do that,
Ann. Well, we had... In those days, we had what were known as equipment men who would pick the equipment for you when you had a show to do. And when they weren't doing anything, they were supposed to clean and dust and polish, you see, and all do, because we had rooms and rooms of equipment, you know. And so we had this new man one time, and he came up and very proudly announced that he'd been spit and polish all over. And, you know, there was a door down there that had a squeak in it, so I oiled it for you. Oh, my Lord. We had to clean that thing and try to get that oil off, and we just couldn't get that rusty sound back again. So literally, we took it out to Fire Island and set it on the beach and let the wind and the salt air get the rust back in those hinges.
That's the part of the story I didn't hear.
Yeah, that's where we sat it. That'll rust anything out there.
You know, Ham, the same type of effect used in a different way created comedy. I'm thinking of Fibber McGee's Closet. You remember that?
Oh, yes. That was a literal thing. I thought of building one here today, but I said it's too much. It was actually a huge pile of junk, you know, stacked and stacked and stacked. Boxes in the boxes filled with all kinds of litter. Everything that you throw away was in there. It was really an actual junk pile. And then it would be tied with a rope at the bottom. One key box right at the bottom, and when you pull that rope, bam, the whole thing came tumbling over. And it was done this way. It could have been done other ways, but the whole point was that it was done in a theater. And they used to feature the sound effects men on theater shows right down by the footlights because it was, you know, fun to watch. So a lot of times you would do something that was dramatically very visual, or visually very dramatic, I should say, to get a big laugh. They wanted a huge laugh out of that audience when that closet came tumbling down, right? ¶¶
I'm almost afraid.
Hey, Molly. Molly, is that you?
Yes, dear. Is everything all right?
Yeah, but don't come in yet. I didn't expect you. I got a little surprise for you. Oh, okay. Come on in.
Oh, what is it, McGee?
Oh, nothing really. I just wanted to get the top back on the piano and get it dusted off. That's all.
The piano. McGee, did you, will it, well, what did you...
Now, like I said, Snooky, all tuned. Sweet as a nut. As soon as you hang your coat up and hat, come back downstairs and try it.
Well, I'll try it right now, this very minute. And do I dread it. Oh, McGee, that's wonderful.
Oh, Jack, it's nothing that any red-blooded American boy couldn't have done. People do it every day. Takes a little time and an ear for music, but just...
A nice... Oh. Why, it's wonderful, McGee. It sounds just like a baby grand. Oh, it is a baby grand, isn't it? It's really going to be a pleasure to play this piano now. I can hardly wait to get at it. Wait till I run upstairs and hang up my coat. I certainly apologize, dearie, for everything I said. You're the most wonderful...
That's man. Okay. That was a close call. Hey, hi, Miller. You can come out now.
I ought to charge you an extra $5 for sitting behind that Davenport, McGee. I got a crick in my neck that...
Pipe down, will you? And get out of here. You better go the back way. No.
Not that door. That's the hall closet. No.
Yeah, I'm sorry, McGee. I didn't realize it.
Take it, will you, High Miller? Quick. Out that way. And much obliged. Oh, well, looks like I got away with it. Hey, Molly, don't you want to try the piano some more?
You know, Ed, one of the sound effects that I always think of, a series of sound effects, I guess you call it a sound pattern, was that which was used on Jack Benny.
Yes, we did a little bit today where the walking down into the vault, the footsteps changed sounds here and there, and then when you got to the vault itself, all hell broke loose, literally, when the door was opened. So, well, should we do that one, Dick? I think it'll be fun to hear again, don't you?
All right, down to Jack Benny's vault we go.
Now, Monsieur Benny, please, the lesson she is over. Will you please pay me my money now and don't keep me waiting like always?
Oh, yes, Professor. How thoughtless of me. I'll go into my vault and get your money.
Gee, I wonder who keeps it further underground, me or Fort Knox. I'm going to ask him someday when I'm there to collect the rent.
There, friend or foe?
Friend.
What's the password?
The British are coming.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Benny.
Yes. We've had that password a long time now, haven't we, Ed?
Yes, ever since that night you hung the lantern in the old North Church.
Oh, yes.
By the way, Mr. Benny, did that fellow on horseback ever make it?
Why?
I had $2 on him.
Well, excuse me a minute, Ed. I'm going to open the vault.
How much money are you putting in?
Oh, nothing. You know, I'm taking some out.
Oh? Sickness in the family?
No, everything's all right. Well, I'm going to open the vault now.
Shall I take a sleeping pill?
No. No, Ed, you can watch. It's all right. See, the combination is right to 45, left to 60, back to 15, and left to 110. There.
Hello,
Why be half baked? Now, let's see. One violin lesson, $1.50. There it is. Well, see you later, Ed.
All right. Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, I meant to ask you, how are things on the outside?
Oh, it's December. Winter is nearly here. And the leaves are falling.
Hey, that must be exciting.
No, no. No, Ed, people are wearing clothes now.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well, goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Goodbye, Ed. Well, now here you are, Professor. $1.50. Here's your dollar, and here's the... Oh, darn it, it was so dark down there, I got the wrong coin. Professor, have you got change for a Spanish doubloon?
Be a payday saver at the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Come into any office of Burritt on the first day, last day, 15th day, or any day of the month, and you'll meet a select group of savers, the payday savers, businessmen, tradesmen, professional people, career girls, and even mothers who save from the grocery money. Why do these people all stop in at the Big B? To save on a regular and very profitable basis. A payday saver is a regular saver, a saver who knows that only through a systematic plan of savings will he be able to pay for that college education, that new home, or retirement trip around the world. At the Burritt, the payday saver receives 5% on a regular account with interest from day of deposit to day of withdrawal, 6% on 2-year certificates of deposit, 5.75% on 1-year certificates, and 5.25% on 90-day notice accounts. Join your friends at the sign of the Big B, the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, with offices in New Britain, West Hartford, Rocky Hill, and Glastonbury. Become a payday saver. Deposits insured by FDIC.
I want to conclude our get-together with you tonight with a program that had as its trademark one of the most involved sound sequences that I can recall, Grand Central Station. Did you ever do that show?
Oh, yes, I did that many times. There's one man at a console. He's got 4 records. I'll give you an idea of the sequence here, because it is not one sound sequence on one record. There's 4 records involved here, as I say. Now, here's the opening. The very first sound, if you remember, is the train approaching. Remember that one?
I sure do.
Okay, now it passes us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the interior, and this is the passenger train running. This is going to go behind your announcement.
Right.
Right? We're running. Right. Just going down the tracks, coming down the Hudson, right? And now we come to the part where the script says, and dies with a roar under the tunnel under Park Avenue. This is a 3rd record. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavier sound, right? And then we have at the very end, we have, this is a record of continuous steam, see? This runs continuously. And I'm going to have the volume control wide open, and I have a switch here, and I'm going to switch it in and fade it out, see?
And I've just got to remember when to come in with the announcements.
Okay.
What always amazed me was that there never were any steam trains going into Grand Central Station in modern times, at any rate.
Author's license.
Right.
Yes.
But,
well, it's like the rugs on the floor, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You all set?
All set.
Here we go.
I start this thing off with the train.
As a bullet seeks its target, shining rails in every part of our great country are aimed at Grand Central Station, part of the nation's greatest city. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night, great trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flashed briefly by the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5-mile tunnel which burrows beneath the glitter and swank of Park Avenue, and then Grand Central Station, crossroads of a million private lives, gigantic stage on which are played 1,000 dramas daily.
Oh, wow, that was great fun.
How did we do that?
Yeah, that's a busy one.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it was done, though.
That's right, yeah.
Ham, I've had great fun visiting with you tonight here at Kent, Connecticut, where you have these marvelous sound effects and have been able to recreate imagery for us that I haven't heard in 25 or 30 years.
Well, it's actually, in this case, I'm recalling it to myself. I haven't done these openings to these shows for years. I had to sit here and think, now, what record did we use, you know? But I came up with them. They're a lot of fun.
They sure are, and they paint a very important part of the golden age of radio, don't they, Ed?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you're trying to set up a museum, aren't you, to show these effects to people in this part of the country?
I've been really seriously trying to get it accomplished because it's just a shame to see all of these things go, all this memorabilia, you know, just go to waste. People want to see it, and you have to have some place for them to come and see it. So I'm trying to work on the town here and see if we can't find some way to fix the zoning problem so that a museum of some sort could be opened up. I think that, if, you know, the 40-cent tour in NBC has the same thing, so why can't we?
Good for you, Hammond. We wish you the very best of luck. And until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
And this is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel and the recordings of Ed Corcoran has been brought to you by WTIC. And by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. With location engineering and technical assistance by Bob Jurego, the Golden Age of Radio is produced and edited by Brian Hartnett. This is Al Terzi.
Pepper Young Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Cam-Aid.
Rinse so white and rinse so bright.